Hello, my name is Ben Ingebretsen, and this training lecture is on the subject of church planting landmines. 9 mistakes to avoid. We're drawing significantly in this lecture on the book by Tom Neville and Gary Rohrmeier by the same title, Church Planting Landmines. Let's just begin with a reality statement that we all have blind spots. We all have blind spots. You've maybe heard the expression before that now you're looking straight into your blind spot. And church planters have blind spots too. There are things that we just don't pick up on. No church plant begins expecting to fail. No ministry begins expecting to fail. And yet, ministries do fail. And church plants do struggle and then close. And when those experiences happen, there's been a number of efforts to try to find out why, to answer the question, why. And I'm sure that what we talk about during this session will only be a limited answer to that question. But hopefully it'll begin to give you some awareness of the areas, the blind spots, the landmines that can become fatal for church planters. And so, as the saying goes, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If we can give you some preventative recommendations and some awareness so that your ministry can avoid one of these landmines, one of these blind spots that can blow up and damage or ultimately close a church plant. And many of these blind spots don't necessarily, or these landmines, don't necessarily put an end to the church plant, but they can damage it, they can hurt it. And so it's our hope that this training will help you begin to have a greater awareness so that you can avoid those things. This next statement may seem to you to be like something went wrong with my typewriter, my printer. But there's what you know you don't know. There's what you don't know that you don't know. There are the things that you say, I just know I don't know much about airplane mechanics. I just know that I don't know much about that. And so I will readily look to someone else to service any airplane that I ever get in, whenever I ever do get in one. It's too complicated for me. I don't know much about it. And so I would never presume to do any service there myself. And so I know that I don't know anything about that. But sometimes we have these blind spots. It's like what you don't know that you don't know. There are the things that you and I don't even know that we don't know about. That's one of the reasons why, unless you've been involved in a church plant and have planted a church once prior, that you may be stepping into an area where you've got significant blind spots, some areas that you don't even know that you don't know about. And it's really important that you pay attention and get wisdom and insight from those who have traveled down the path. And so these following landmines that we talk about will hopefully give you insight into some areas that you may not have ever thought about before. There's a great value in studying failure. This training class, this lecture, may strike you as very negative. But we're choosing to be very negative because there is a lot of benefit in studying failure that teaches us a great deal. Sometimes it teaches us more than studying success. So I hope that this is useful for you. So let's start out with the first landmine And we're going to call it ignoring personal health and growth. Ignoring personal health and growth. This kind of a landmine oftentimes happens to people in the midlife of ministry. See, midlife of ministry is between ages 35 and 55 in many settings, not all. These are the ages when some of the biggest mistakes can be made by people in ministry. During the early years of ministry, there can be mistakes that are made, but they are oftentimes easy to recover from. And oftentimes, they are not sizable. They're small mistakes. During the later years of ministry, there's usually wisdom. And during the wisdom years, people avoid a lot of the mistakes. But it's those ages 35 to 55 that some of the biggest mistakes can be made. And oftentimes they're made because we begin to ignore personal health and growth. And that lack of health or that failure to pay attention to personal growth begins to lead to a person who gets sloppy, lazy, not self-disciplined, careless. They begin to do things in ministry that are foolish. So midlife in ministry is a risky time. And it's an important time not to ignore personal health and growth. That failure can include abusing finances, abusing power, abusing sex. You've perhaps heard of ministry leaders who were doing fine, but they began to ignore their personal health and growth. They began to ignore their spiritual health, and they fell into sin. Pride that creeps up, especially during those years. The older you get, the more you become aware of how little you know. The younger you are, the more conscious you are of how little you know. But during those midlife years, there can be a pride that can creep in. It can really come at any time. But that's another personal health issue that can become unhealthy, an unhealthy pride, and a failure to pay attention to physical health. Ministry leaders can work so hard at ministry that they fail to take care of their health. And that's not good. A neglect of family, where they're always paying attention to the ministry but failing to pay attention to children and spouse. So how do you disarm the landmine number one? Number one, be in a coaching, mentoring, accountable relationship your whole ministry long. Always be in a coaching or a mentoring relationship. Always be accountable to someone or someones. Maintain your spiritual disciplines. Walk with God. That's easier said than done. It takes work. We all can become lazy in that. And that shows up over time. So maintain your spiritual disciplines. Retreat daily. Take some time each day with the Lord. Take a day each week as your Sabbath to have a break from the rigors and the work of ministry. Take some time each month to pray in an extended time, maybe a prayer retreat, a half a day. Take some time once a year to get away with God. Become a lifelong learner. Don't neglect your personal health and growth. Number two, lack of leadership development. Here's a landmine. This landmine happens whenever there's the temptation to be the leader rather than the leader of leaders. All right? And by that I mean whenever we presume that we can lead it all and we want to be the one in charge of it all, rather than understanding that as church planters, We're at our very best when we're developing other leaders, when we're raising up others to do the work of the ministry. That our role is as a equipper, an empower, a trainer, a visioner, the development of leadership and the failure to develop leadership will not necessarily destroy your church plant, but what it will do is it will cause your church plant to grow very, very small. The failure to develop leaders will grow your ministry in a small direction. It's whenever you raise up and train up and develop and send out and empower and release other leaders to launch small groups, to be worship leaders, to do other dimensions of ministry and lead other dimensions of ministry, that your ministry will grow. Failing to identify potential leaders. How are you going to find out who your potential leaders are? Failure to train up and raise up leaders. Failure to create a leadership development culture in the ministry. Your ministry stands to be blessed or otherwise around this issue of leadership development. So how do you disarm this landmine number two? Number one, first of all, develop a working definition of leadership. What does it mean to be a leader in your ministry? I would hope that a working definition of leadership in your ministry is that everyone leads when they're developing another leader. Everyone leads when they are developing another leader. It's, again, back to Paul and Timothy. Paul led because Paul was developing a Timothy and a Titus and a John Mark, and the list goes on and on. Number two, pray the Lord of the harvest for new leaders. Always be on the lookout for new leaders. And don't always look upon someone from what you see in them at the moment. Begin and learn to see the potential in another person. Begin and learn to see the promise, the possibilities in another person. So often, ministry leaders can limit their potential or what they see in others out of a sense of insecurity or a sense of fear or a sense of pride. Don't be that way. See the potential in others. Be an empowering leader. Raise up another leader. Give away some opportunity and some responsibility to someone else at a level that they're prepared to handle and manage. Be a grower of others. Grow other leaders. Look for Christ-like, teachable, faithful, obedient, available, willing servants. You can almost take that and turn it around. You're not looking for people who don't evidence the character of Christ. Leaders for your ministry are going to be those who already give some evidence that they're seeking to be Christ-like. You're not looking for people who know it all. You're looking for people who are teachable. You're not looking for people who are unreliable. You're looking for people who are faithful, reliable. You're not looking for people who have great disobedience in their lives currently. You're looking for people who are showing signs of being obedient. You're not looking for people who are already way too busy. You're looking for people that are available. You're not looking for people who are unwilling. You're looking for people who are willing. Begin to look for leaders and train them. Train them intentionally. Develop a system that says, I'm going to do and you watch. And then we're going to do together. And then you're going to do and I'm going to watch. And each step of the way, I'm going to be teaching you and talking with you and training you, because I want you to learn from me. I want us to learn from one another. And then I want to talk with you about how you are growing in a new role of leadership and ministry in your life. Become a leader developer and train people intentionally. Here's some ways to do it. And coach them monthly. Stay in touch with those that you are developing. Don't raise up a new leader and then fail to spend time with them. Spend time with them at least once a month. At least once a month, spend an hour with them and talk with them about how are they doing and how are they growing and what are they learning. Landmine number 3, leadership backlash. Leadership backlash occurs when you have a sudden and a surprising negative reaction from another leader in your organization. Leadership backlash happens when people are suddenly not on board with your vision. Leadership backlash occurs when people that you've had a prior experience with suddenly don't support you. It happens with folks that you've not carefully evaluated. It happens with people who are not able to follow. It happens with people who are not loyal to you and to your ministry. Leadership backlash comes at usually a very undesirable time. There's never a good time for it. When you're pastoring and you're planting and you're working hard, and suddenly someone from within your group is your biggest opponent. Suddenly someone from within the church is making things difficult for you. That's leadership backlash. So how do you disarm this landmine? Number one, discern if someone's on board with your general vision and values, and if not, use caution. As you're discerning someone's role in your ministry, discern carefully if they're on board with your vision and values. If you're considering the future of someone in a leadership role in your ministry, discern carefully if they're on board with your vision and values. If not, use caution. Secondly, discern if they're personally supportive of you. Discern if a person personally supports you, if they're your friend, if they'll speak to your face, if you've got a good relationship with them, if you can be in a comfortable relationship with them and talk about ministry and talk about the other stuff of life, if you have a warm and trusting relationship with them, that's good. If you don't, if they pull away, if they seem not to be supportive of you or don't seem to want to be in relationship with you, then use caution. They may be preparing to really make things difficult for you in your work. One of the biggest mistakes you can have and make in the ministry in a new church start is to give away titles prematurely. One of the biggest mistakes you can make is to be in a relationship with someone that you don't know well. You don't know if they're on board with your vision and values entirely. You really haven't tested that over time. And you don't know if they personally support you. You really haven't tested that over time. And still you give them the title elder. Or still you give them the title deacon. That's a foolish thing to do. Don't do that. Don't give away those titles prematurely. A better rule of thumb is to give away responsibilities. Give away tasks, but don't give away titles. Give time to giving of titles. Give time to discern a person's earning that role of elder or deacon. Don't use Don't form an internal board prematurely. An internal board is a group of folks within your church plant that you are ultimately responsible for. Eventually, you want an internal board. Eventually, when your ministry is self-funding, you want to be self-governing. A board that is within the ministry, made up of people within the ministry that attend the church. You want that eventually, but not from the start. From the start, your board should be external to the church. Should be a group of folks, perhaps a group of pastors from other churches in the area, perhaps from a denominational group of folks that are part of the denomination or the fellowship that you're a part of, people that are not a part of the church but are deeply supportive and care deeply about the church, that you are accountable to. This is healthy, and this is wise during the first several years of a church plant. You don't want to form an internal board too quickly, because in forming an internal board, people get power and get authority that they may not use wisely or well. And so it's best to have an external board for the first several years of the new church start. Test people before you title them. We said this earlier. Give them a short-term assignment. Give them a short-term responsibility. Ask them to carry on a certain activity or a certain ministry area. If they ask you for a title, don't give it. Tell them that they're being tested. Tell them that you need to test them if need be. Sometimes it's best not to tell someone that you're testing them. But if need be, you say, I need to observe you for a while. I need to see how we work together. I need to know that you're on board with our vision and values. Test people before you title them. Landmine number 4. Personal evangelism entropy. Entropy is a word that we don't use very often. It means decline. It means a drop off. And the drop off in personal evangelism can occur in a variety of ways in a new church start. For instance, during the pre-launch of the church plant, usually it requires a high work amount of evangelistic work. But once the ministry launches and public worship services begin to occur, and there's the busyness of developing sermons and caring for the congregation, oftentimes the church planter will begin to fail to do evangelistic work like they were doing from the start. Caring for new believers can be time intensive. New believers are exciting when they come to faith, but the care of their lives whenever their experiences are difficult, when their lives are full of sin or full of trouble, can take a lot of time. And so it can take time away from reaching new people with the gospel. Launching regular weekly worship can be time intensive. We've mentioned that. Weariness can cause the planter to limit their relationship to believers. Because church planters work so many hours and are so busy, sometimes the planter just needs a break, needs just to be with other believers and to get their battery recharged. The result is that the planter is spending less time with the very people that led to the launch of a successful plant, namely the evangelistic converts. So, how do we disarm this landmine? Number one, update your time management skills. You're going to have to get better at using your time when you plant a new church. You're going to have to get better because you're going to have to be as involved in the lives of those who aren't believers as always, if possible. You're going to have to stay connected to the unbelievers as you, by example, show the rest of your new church how they need to do the work of an evangelist. Develop a spiritual mentor team for new believers so that you can stay focused on evangelism. Pray for the new contacts and stay connected to places where you can meet them. Keep your heart focused on the harvest. Ask people to introduce you to their non-believing friends. and show them how you do evangelism. Show them how you have a spiritual conversation with someone. Stay focused. And one technique, again, is to draw and to train your existing congregation, your newly forming congregation, train them to do evangelism, and so that you can stay connected to them while you're also connecting to the harvest. Number five, corporate evangelism entropy. Again, we're talking about entropy as a decline or a downward emphasis on evangelism. This is a landmine. It happens. If the church doesn't evangelize, it'll die. Still, evangelism entropy can creep into a church within the first few weeks of their public service. People begin to worship, and they begin to come to worship, and they see friends. They see other believers. They're excited about seeing their other friends and other believers, and they stop paying attention to the newcomers. They stop paying attention to the people who are worshiping for the first time. Number two, people are swept up in urgent needs of the body. Meetings, pastoral care, moving things around, logistics, all the work of making those Sunday morning experiences of worship, public worship, happen. The meetings, the pastoral care of members that need to be cared for. And so suddenly people have fewer non-believing friends. And suddenly people neglect the real areas of priority, of helping people get connected to the ministry, leadership development, and evangelism. Those are your key areas during the initial start of the church, is helping people form relationships in the church who are coming for the first time, developing new leaders, and reaching brand new people. So how do you disarm this landmine? Number one, teach your people to pray for their non-believing friends. Teach your people to pray for their non-believing friends. This is so critical, to turn people's eyes off of themselves, turn people's eyes off of their own personal wishes and wants, and continue to keep their eyes focused on the harvest. A critical first step. Training people to share their own testimony. Teaching people how to share their faith. One technique is to help someone share their experience with God in and amongst other believers, so that they can then build the confidence to share their experience of God in and amongst non-believers. Train people to invite outsiders. Train them how to invite. Most people become uncomfortable with inviting. And so you need to train them how to get to know their neighbor, get to know their neighbor's name, invite their neighbor to come with them, not to go to church, not to come to church, but to come with them, to pick their neighbor up, to stop by their home and come with them to church. Train people to maintain relationships with non-believers. So often people begin to worship in a new church and they break off their relationships with non-believers. That's regrettable. That's not good. Train people to maintain their relationship with non-believers, to stay connected to the non-believer, to care for them and love them, and stay in relationship with them as Christ formed relationships and stayed in relationships with all the people that he did, the Zacchaeus, there's the name I was looking for, the Zacchaeuses of Jesus' world. Number six, the landmine of inadequate assimilation. Assimilation is a word that we don't use very often, but it means enfolding. It means to help someone who's on the outside become connected. Oftentimes people begin to attend worship services, begin to attend your church, but they may not feel like they're really a part. They may feel like they're on the outside looking in. They may feel like they're not really a part of the body. So failure to assimilate people well is not good. it will create a group of people that will not stay at the church. They will leave after a while, perhaps. Or they'll drift into a pattern of only attending occasionally. So if you reach them, you must also keep them. Evangelism and discipleship need to go together. That just because we reach them doesn't mean we've made a disciple of them, right? Just because we've reached them doesn't mean that they've cultivated the qualities of a disciple, of a deep qualities of a follower of Jesus. If you reach them and don't keep them, you have to ask why. Why is it that some people come to our church, they come one or two times and they never come back? That's a very important question to answer. It's a very important question to wrestle with. And to understand, why might it be that people are not coming back? They may not come back because they didn't feel welcome. They may not come back because they didn't understand the message. They may not have come back because they didn't receive the personal invitation to come back and to stay in a relationship with you in the ministry or with someone else in the ministry. People eventually want to be in a relationship with others in the ministry, and they may not have felt that. So here's some ideas to disarm landmine number five. Number one, seek to get feedback from those who did not return. Why did they not come back? I often say that one of the most valuable people in your ministry is the person who comes once or twice and never comes back. They're a terribly valuable person because if you could find out why they didn't come back, you would find out something that you could perhaps change, and that would make a big difference for many, many more people who come. So, if possible, find out why people don't come back. If you can make a connection with them, if you can do a follow-up with them, try to get their name, as always, and then try to follow up. Invite people to follow up. Excuse me, to a follow-up gathering, a small group, share a meal with them. That's the ideal and the perfect way. I always love it, again, to watch. Let's talk about Zacchaeus. How does Jesus assimilate Zacchaeus into the kingdom? He goes to Zacchaeus' house and he shares a meal with him. But sharing a meal with someone else has a very strong effect in most cultures of helping people feel connected, like they're valued, like they fit in, like they belong. So invite people to a follow-up gathering, a small group. Invite them to share a meal with you. Develop a welcoming team that's responsible for showing hospitality. There are some people in your congregation, in your church plant, that have the gift of hospitality. That word hospitality is a wonderful word. It means to make space for outsiders. Make space for the people who really don't fit yet. And you can make space for outsiders in lots of different ways. One of the best ways is simply to get their name. Find out what their name is. And people with a gift of hospitality are good at that. They'll find out what someone's name is. And they'll learn that person's name so that they can call that person by name the next time they see them, so that they can build a friendship and a relationship with that person. But you may need a team of folks. You may need to identify the people in your church, in your church plant, that have the gift of hospitality. Someone has said that in a new church start, perhaps the most important gift is the gift of hospitality. Hospitality is such a valuable gift because it's always making room for others. It's always caring about their name, caring about who they are, and wanting to make them feel like they're at home, they're comfortable, they're welcome in the church. Find out who the people are with the gift of hospitality in your church plant and use them strategically, wisely. You will not regret that a bit. And finally, review your preaching and be sure it's understandable to a new attender. If your preaching is hard to understand, you want to know that. And you need some trusted people who will continually give you feedback on your preaching so that they can let you know if it's hard to understand by a new attender. It will be hard for a new attender to attend and to break into that social group of your church. It'll be hard for them to form those relationships if the preaching is hard for them to understand. And so take the time to see what you can do to improve your preaching, change your preaching, so that it's a pleasant and a positive and a helpful experience for a new attender. Number 7, fear of money. We talk about this in one of the training series that we provide on raising funds and developing stewards in a new church start. If you haven't seen that training series, I urge you to do so. This is a landmine. See, most pastors don't want to talk about money, thinking that it'll scare people away. Many pastors and church planters don't recognize that when it comes to money, it's not about what the church needs. It's not about what the church needs. It's not about what you need. It's about what God wants. God wants generosity, and people need to grow in that gift of generosity. The failure to talk about money keeps people from deep discipleship growth. There are few things that will deepen the walk of a disciple, quite like generosity and giving. And if the pastor works without support, and ministry cannot reach its potential. What I'm intending to say that if the pastor doesn't have financial support, at some point the ministry can't reach its potential. Whether it's the need for time on task, time for the pastor to do the ministry, leadership that they're called to do, and equipping the saints and empowering the saints, or whether it's the need for rental of space or any other financial needs, the failure to raise some resources and some funding for those purposes causes the ministry not to reach its potential. So, how can you disarm this landmine? Number one, stay biblically grounded. Stay biblically grounded. That God owns it all. God is the rightful owner of all things. It all belongs to God. Therefore, there's no shortage of funds. There's only a shortage of stewards, only a shortage of givers. All right? That people are stewards, not owners. Matthew chapter 25 and so many other parables of Jesus make this point. That people are only temporarily entrusted with some resources that one day they'll be held accountable for, and that they are, in fact, not the owners, but they are the temporary managers of those resources. And finally, the stewardship is a learned behavior. Paul coaches Timothy in 1 Timothy 6 to command those who are wealthy or who have means or who have resources, to command them to be rich in generosity. And to stay biblically grounded is to recognize that when you ask people to give, you are not raising money for your ministry. You are growing them in the grace of giving. You are growing them in their awareness of their position as stewards in God's world. And that one day they'll be held accountable for that stewardship. And you're faithfully seeking to grow them that way. And you're giving them an opportunity to give to your ministry as an expression of that faithful stewardship. Stay biblically grounded. That's the best way I know of to disarm this landmine. Teach stewardship regularly, time, talent, and treasure, to earn, to give, and to save. John Wesley's little preaching series. To grow people up in the practice of regular, faithful generosity requires that every Sunday you say a little something about God's priority on ownership. and our role as temporary stewards. It requires that every Sunday we say something about the gift and the grace of giving. A little something about the blessedness of giving versus receiving. And that we remind people that it's not about us. It's not about the needs of our ministry. It's about the need we all have to grow as givers. So maintain that regular, graceful, patient. It doesn't mean you preach on stewardship every week, but it means that every week you say a little something, a one or two sentences. It does mean also that at least once a year you preach on stewardship. Each year you ought to preach a series on time, talent, and treasure stewardship. But teach on stewardship regularly. And be an example and then ask. Be the first one to give. I know a pastor who every Sunday, when the offering was taken, they were the first one to put their gift in the offering plate. That's a good thing. Be an example. And then ask that others would follow that example of stewardship. Number 8, underestimating spiritual attack. Here's a landmine that's important and that we certainly should not neglect. Tough times come to ministry. Tough times come to church planting. Church planting has lots of rough spots in it. And there's probably four reasons why. The first reason is we live in a fallen world, and the brokenness and the fallenness of the world is all around us, and sometimes simply bad things happen. There's no great explanation for it, but the rain falls on the just and the unjust. The good times come to the just and the unjust. The bad times come to the just and the unjust. Sometimes tough times are simply because we live in a world where things just don't always work right. Sometimes things go badly in a church plant because we make foolish choices. We do foolish things. We ought to know better, but we make a poor choice. Sometimes things go badly in church plants because we make sinful choices. We do things that are wrong, are sinful, are dishonoring of God. Sometimes things go bad for any number of those first three reasons. And we acknowledge it, and we say, next time we'll try to do better. We acknowledge it by saying we repent of that. We acknowledge it by saying we're going to try that again. Other times, things go wrong in a church plant because we face spiritual battles. Ephesians chapter 6 reminds us that we wrestle against principalities and powers. And sometimes we're not altogether certain whether it was an attack from Satan or there was just a fallen, broken world that we live in and things just don't always work right. But the reality is that Satan would love to destroy your church plant. Satan would love for you to fail. Now, we're grateful that the promises of God and the power of Christ and the hope of the resurrection and the gifts of the Holy Spirit are all there to enable you to overcome and to be successful by God's grace. But church planting will suffer from all of the above reasons. But spiritual battle often comes as discouragement, fear, or physical opposition. Spiritual battle can come when, as a planter, you feel so overwhelmed, and that overwhelming experience goes on, and it's unlike you to be so overwhelmed. Or if you're paralyzed by fear, or spiritual battle can certainly come whenever there is sickness, and we recognize that we live in a fallen and broken world, and that sickness comes, and that illness comes. It's appointed unto us once to die. That's part of the world we live in. But sometimes that physical opposition comes from the hand of the accuser and the hand of our great adversary, the devil. So how do we disarm this landmine? First of all, we develop and maintain a prayer team. You should always have a prayer team. It's praying for your ministry. I trust that you have that. And that they're aware and they get updates and they can pray specifically. That you don't give a foothold to Satan, that we confess sin, stay humble, and walk with Christ. A foothold for Satan can come in so many different ways. In the book of Ephesians, it talks about not giving Satan a foothold by hanging on to anger. There's lots of ways that Satan can gain a foothold. So it's critical that we stay humble and walk with Christ. That we have times of fasting and prayer. That there be times of healing and deliverance. I'm not here to predict. I don't know. But I believe that most church plants will experience a time of attack. That's been my observation. And I trust that when that time comes, that not only will we experience the provision of God, but that we will be seeking that provision and be preparing for that time of challenge when it comes. Finally, number 9, premature launch. Most churches do not grow large because they do not plan on it from the start. The 9th landmine is about launching a public worship service before you're ready to. Most churches don't grow large because they don't plan on it from the start. They plan they launch quickly because they eagerly want to begin to have church services in some formal sort of a way. And the planter is eager to begin to preach in some formal sort of a way. And they fail to do the groundwork that will lead to a larger church. And so as a result, because the planter is so busy with preaching and so busy, and the group is only maybe 12 or a dozen people or less or more, the ministry doesn't grow much faster or further than that. Moving too quickly to public worship takes all the energy and resources of the people and the pastor. And the pastor often feels the urgency to have worship services when they should feel the urgency for evangelism and discipleship. Whenever we exchange God's agenda for our agenda, we limit the potential. Jesus said, "Go and make disciples of all nations." He didn't say, "Go and hurry up and start having church services." He said, "Go and make disciples." And then he said, "And baptize them." I take it from that the first work that we're given to do is to evangelize and disciple make, to make followers of Christ, and then to begin to organize and meet and do public worship services where there's baptisms and teachings and the development of a worshiping community. Whenever we organize too quickly and begin to have services too quickly, we limit the evangelism and discipleship work, the one-on-one work. There's simply not enough time in the life of the pastor. And there's not enough time for building lots of relationships and doing lots of one-on-one, and that's the critical thing, the one-on-one evangelistic and discipleship work. So how do we disarm this landmine? Number 1, establish small groups as simple and reproducible house churches. Simple and reproducible is the key to launching a larger church. That you begin by launching simple and reproducible house churches that take very little preparation to gather people for, where people can come together, read the Word, read the Bible, have a Bible study, or listen to the Scriptures read to them, talk about the meaning and what Jesus is calling them to do, and then pray for one another, and experience Christian fellowship, and pray for their neighbor, invite their neighbor to a home, invite people to a small group, and to develop several of those house churches before a larger public gathering. I recommend developing 3, 4, or 5 house churches before a larger public gathering. That way the ministry is able to launch larger. If each house church has 5 to 10 or 12 people in it, the public gathering can be larger. And with a larger public gathering, you can have a greater witness and a stronger witness into your community. Develop multiple house church leaders to build your leadership team structure. Here's the key. You can only have multiple house churches if you have multiple house church leaders. And the key person, the first person, is the person who has the gift of hospitality. The person who will open their home or who will open a space and make others feel welcome, who will serve them and give others a sense that they've come to a welcoming place, so that then there can be a time of scripture reading and teaching. To focus on evangelism and discipleship and personal relationships with non-believers. This is the key to the first phase of a church plant. And whenever you have many, 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 many relationships with non-believers and many, many, many personal relationships with them and a lot of disciple-making taking place one-on-one and a great deal of evangelism in multiple homes, then moving to launching with a larger public gathering is appropriate and will have the greatest impact if that's your vision for ministry.